Thanks for coming today. You know, the last several days, at the end of the day, I'll go home and stand in the shower and just kind of watch and feel the dirt and the grime of people's homes, people's lives that I've been digging in, wash off of me and circle down the drain and try to get the stench of decay and sewage and just the smell of hopelessness off of me. And I climb out of the shower and my body feels lifted from that. But my spirit does not. And coming here, and you're coming here, and us being together, and us singing together, and us sharing this moment, does that to my spirit. It helps wash away the burdens that I carry in here today. The questions that I wrestle with today. And I hope in some small way it does that for you. Some small way. Thanks for coming. I was talking with a church member this week, and they told me, they said, you know, we've only been talking about this all summer long. We've only been talking about how we serve one another in every capacity where our church has relationships. We've only been talking about how the stories of Ruth that makes sacrificial gifts to help family and friends in desperate need, how that story is our story too. And how in Nehemiah people rally together and come together and give and serve to rebuild their city. Eerily parallel, isn't it? We've only been talking about that all summer. And how the empty, comical, satirical religion of Jonah that cares so much for himself but not for the people in need, how that negative portrayal spurs us on to be not like him, to go to people in need regardless of what their religion is, regardless of what their race or their language or their community, regardless of what their needs are, that in the midst of all of our needs, humanity becomes just one. Humanity. These stories are our stories. We've only been talking about it all summer, right? This week, we got to be in some of your homes. We got to be in homes of our own church family, hauling out carpet, breaking out sheetrock. Lots of UBC families took on water. Some are experiencing substantial or total loss. I'll leave after lunch today, and I'll drive into Dickinson and go stand in the remnants of a home that took water up to the ceiling for one of our church family members who stood on this stage a half hour ago and played a flute solo and played "It Is Well With My Soul" for our 9:30 congregation. This is our story. I don't put a whole lot of numbers and stories out on my social media. Because we don't do this for recognition. We do this because it's who we are. But over the last 4 days, We've sent an average of 200 people out every day. And in 4 days, we've cleaned out 65 homes of neighbors, people in our community, people we don't even know. That's an estimated 5,000 hours of volunteer service. And that's just the people that have met here and gone out with our organized groups. Because I know of 20 other groups of people going with employees, coworkers, folks in their own neighborhood, going and doing stuff. Add another 1,000 or 2,000 to that number. The transformation we hope to see in our city might not exactly have been carpet and sheetrock in mounds outside of people's homes. It doesn't look like progress. It doesn't feel like progress. But to walk into a home with 3 feet of water on one day and then walk back into it 4 days later after a clean out crew has been there, and to look in the eyes of that family that felt like we don't have any idea where to go next, and to see a glimmer of hope return to their eye, all of a sudden those piles of garbage sitting out beside the streets everywhere in Houston you go are pictures of progress. They're pictures of hope. They're pictures of transformation. We had a TV crew come by the church yesterday. They wanted to do an interview. They're working on a story. The TV station was not CNN or Fox News. It was not NBC. It was not Bloomberg. It was not BBC. The broadcast network is called MBN. You guys ever tune into MBM regularly? Yeah, they don't broadcast in English. They broadcast in about 17 other languages all over the world. Yeah, MBN is the Middle East Broadcasting Networks. And they were checking on mosques in the Houston area and came across one and heard a story about how they were cleaning up and a Baptist church sent a bunch of people and helped them clean up their mosque. And they wanted to come to the mosque and shoot some footage and interview. And then they wanted to go to the church where 15 people from that church went and helped them clean up their mosque and shoot some footage and do an interview. And that story probably won't be aired in our country, but it'll be aired in Pakistan, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, India, Lebanon, Syria. Serve your family, serve your community, serve your world. We got to do all those things in a week. A horrible week. But a pretty incredible week. I really could not be more proud to be a part of this family. I really could not be. And if that's how I feel, and all of my own limitations, I want you to think about how proud your Father in heaven, who sees all that I do not, and who loves these people far more than I do, I want you to think about how proud He is of you, of us, of our greater church community around the city. Nice job. Great job this week. Where do we go next? I mean, what do we do next? What do we say next? There's more work to be done. We, the people here in our city, the people in our church, we're going to be hitting fatigue soon, if you have not already. And I want you to know, help is coming. Man, we got churches in Louisiana and Arkansas and Oklahoma and Pennsylvania. We got churches all over the country that are asking if they can come and help. When can they come help? How soon can they get here? Do we have a place for them to stay? We got people coming. So there's a break. But be reminded that this process is a long process. The intense, heavy work is now, but the calling and checking on people and taking by food and just sitting and listening and becoming a new friend is longer work. It's less intense, but takes more time. But this is a long process for our city. And we're committed to the process. We where we left off 2 weeks ago, we were in the book of Jonah, and so I'd like to go back there one more time today. If you have a Bible and you want to join me, you can. We were going to do Jonah 3 last week, and of course we missed last week. I was in Colorado trying to get home, and even after we canceled worship services, I was still in Colorado trying to get home. So, but we had a lot of points we could talk about with Jonah 3, and what I'd like to do is take Jonah 3 and 4, the rest of the story, and put it into one message. And instead of making lots and lots of points, I just have one point from chapter 3 and one point from chapter 4 for you to consider today. Obviously, the text is the same, but the applications may shift in light of our current circumstances. So I'm going to read chapter 3 and then give you something to consider. Jonah 3. The word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time. Go to the great city of Nineveh and proclaim to it the message I give you. And Jonah obeyed the word of the Lord and went to Nineveh. It's interesting how Jonah, even in his own little personal crisis, being thrown overboard, being swallowed by a fish, spending 3 days and three nights seasick, I'm sure, up to his gills in the belly of a fish, his own personal crisis made him much more compliant to obey what God had told him to do. I think that's true of us, right? It's a whole lot easier for us to rush out and to help and to give and to share and to serve in light of crisis. It's kind of natural to human nature. It's not an attack. It's just an observation. But this time Jonah obeys, and he went to Nineveh. Nineveh was a very great city, an exceedingly great city. 3 days' journey in breadth, and what that likely means is it would have taken him 3 days to navigate the streets and the people of the city to deliver the message throughout. On the first day Jonah started into the city, he proclaimed, 40 more days and Nineveh will be overturned. And that was all he did. Instead of going 3 days, he went 1 day. I picture him stepping his foot in, preaching the shortest message ever in the history of sermons, and then stepping out. He didn't want to be there. He didn't care about these people. He only went because God made him go. And he steps in and says, 40 more days and Nineveh will be overturned. Verse 5, the Ninevites believed God. They called for a fast and put on sackcloth from the greatest of them to the least of them. When the news reached the king of Nineveh, he rose from his throne, took off his royal robes, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat down in ashes. I don't suspect you've come across people actually wearing sackcloth and actually sitting in ashes. But haven't you guys seen people the last few days wearing sackcloth and sitting in ashes? The king of Nineveh, he does this and he issues a proclamation. He says, by the decree of the king and his nobles, do not let any man or beast, herd or flock taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink. But let man and beast be covered with sackcloth. Let everyone call urgently on God. Let them give up their evil ways and their violence. Who knows? God may yet relent and with compassion turn from his fierce anger so that we will not perish. And when God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, he had compassion and did not bring upon them the destruction he had threatened. In the midst of calamity, people go looking for God, do they not? That's the point. Jonah 3. In the midst of calamity, it almost sends people running to go look for God. Not everybody asks the same questions. Not everybody looks for God in the same places. Not everybody goes on that search with the same attitude. Some do it from a place of hope. Some do it from a place of anger and bitterness. But calamity seems to send people looking for God. It's amazing how I can stand in the living room with a gentleman who for years and years and years is a self-proclaimed atheist, and in that moment express his bitter anger at why God could let this happen. Calamity just does something to us. Crisis does something to us. Is God out there? If so, who is he? What's his role in all of this? Did he cause this? Did he just allow this? Is he even watching this? What's his role here? What is our role here? Is it our fault? Is this just things that happen? And ultimately, what is my connection? What is my personal connection to God, whoever he happens to be? You hear this, I so appreciate the Ninevites. It's one of the greatest pictures of faith in the Old Testament, and it's not exemplified by a Hebrew, it's not exemplified by Moses or David, it's exemplified by an Assyrian king and his people who say, we don't even know who this God is. We don't know who this prophet is. We don't know if we should believe him or not, but calamity is coming. We are told. And so we're going to explore every possibility. Who is he? What's our job? What can we do? Let's fast. Let's put on sackcloth. Let's put burlap sacks over our animals. Maybe God really likes cows and donkeys, and if our animals fast with us, that'll be something that will turn his heart our way. We don't know. Who knows if he's even capable of compassion? But let's consider our own sinfulness, our own wickedness, our own violence, and turn from those things and pray. And who knows, maybe God will change course. And God does. He changes course. Who is God? What's his role in all of this? You know, in all these questions, if you go to the next slide, the only thing, the only thing I think we can definitively answer is when it comes to the end, and it says definitively we can speak to what our response is and what is our connection to God. Trying to fathom the mind of God, it's fun for theological debate, it makes for interesting books, but the mind of God is still the mind of God. You know, we talked on Wednesday night at our service about how I try to think about God's role in this the way I experience my role as a parent. And I don't know if it's one or a combination or all of these things. But it doesn't matter if this crisis or the next one after that is a case of God disciplining us, if it's a case of God allowing us to feel the consequences of our own sinful actions, if it's God allowing us to experience difficulty that will lead to us growing stronger, or if it's God pushing us into situations that will make us stronger. I do all of those things for my kids, and I do all of them out of a position of love for my kids and for their well-being. And you know what? As I look to God and say, okay, God, which one is this, or is it something else? Is it a combination of these things? I can't fathom the mind of God. I can't completely understand what his motivations are, what his role is, what he's doing. But here's what I know, that in all of those, the capacity is there for me to learn and to grow stronger as a result of this if I choose to. for us as a church to learn, to grow closer to Him, to grow stronger if we choose to, for us as a city to do the same, and as the world is watching us, for us to exemplify to all of them what it looks like to take this and to grieve and to mourn and to rally and to grow and to be better and to be stronger on the other side of it. Calamity sends people looking for God. It doesn't matter if you already know Him and you're trying to process this, or you don't know who God is and you don't have a relationship with Jesus and you're just searching for something, searching for answers. The Ninevites were not followers of Yahweh. They didn't participate in the Hebrew religion. And they just said, we don't know, but maybe. Maybe. If this calamity hasn't sent you looking for God, it should. What's your connectedness to Him? How can it be stronger? If there is none, how can we help you connect to God? If you don't know what it means to be a Christian, how can we help you? How can we answer questions for you? We'd love the chance to do that. Chapter 4. It's good news. It's the most successful sermon ever preached. Jonah preaches like 4 words in Hebrew one time, and the whole city, 120,000 people, turn to God. That's a tall tale if ever there was one. And Jonah's mad because he didn't like these people to begin with. He was a little bit prejudiced, religiously speaking, and probably racially speaking. So chapter 4 tells us Jonah has a temper tantrum. Jonah was greatly displeased and became angry. He prayed to the Lord. Oh Lord, is this not what I said when I was still in my country? That is why I made haste to flee to Tarshish, for I knew that you are a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and relenting from disaster. That's the sermon he should have preached in Nineveh, by the way. Chapter 4, verse 2 is the sermon. He should have tagged that on. 40 more days in Nineveh will be overturned, but God, I know, is gracious and merciful, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love and relenting from disaster. He didn't put that in there. And oh, by the way, if you were here when we did Jonah 1 3 weeks ago, remember I told you when Jonah told the sailors to throw him overboard, I asked you the question, was this his only choice? And back then, maybe we weren't sure. Maybe Jonah thought it's like a potion that a magician is brewing and the last element is, you know, a petulant prophet from Samaria thrown into the ocean and poof, the storm stops. The same Jonah that said, pick me up and throw me overboard, is Jonah who knows God is abounding in steadfast love, relenting from disaster, slow to anger. You think Jonah was suicidal in chapter 1? He is again in chapter 4. Keep reading. Oh Lord, this is why I didn't come. I knew you might forgive these people. So now, oh Lord, please take my life from me. It's better for me to die than to live. But the Lord replied, do you do well to be angry, or have you any right to be angry? Jonah went out and sat down at a place east of the city. He'd preached 40 days. Maybe in the next 39 days, these people will revert and God will send fire and brimstone on top of them. So he goes and sets up camp and sits down to watch. He made himself a shelter, sat in its shade, and waited to see what would happen to the city. Then the Lord God provided a vine and made it grow up over Jonah to give shade for his head to ease his discomfort. And Jonah was very happy about the vine. It's the first time he's been happy in the whole book. It's because he had a shade tree. But at dawn the next day, God provided a worm which chewed the vine so that it withered. When the sun rose, God provided a scorching east wind, and the sun blazed on Jonah's head so that he grew faint. He wanted to die, and he said, again, it would be better for me to die than to live. He's a little bit of a drama queen. God said to Jonah, why are you angry about the vine? You've got more of an emotional attachment to this vine. What's the deal? Do you have a right to be angry? And Jonah says, I do. I am angry enough to die. It's comedy. I mean, it's intended this way. It's satire. It's comedy that speaks to a very uncomfortable truth. But the Lord said, you have been concerned about the vine, though you did not tend it or make it grow. You didn't do any work. You didn't plant it. You didn't water it. You didn't do anything. It sprang up overnight and died overnight. But Nineveh has more than 120,000 people who cannot tell their right hand from their left, and many cattle as well. I like that God's concerned about the cows. Should I not be concerned about that great city? The end. It ends kind of like, and the moral of the story is, 120,000 people, Jonah, you don't think I should be concerned about them and all of their animals? I try to think about what, there's lots of points we can make, by the way, from chapter 4, but here's my observation this week as I thought about this chapter. Jonah was willing, and he really wasn't even willing, but he did go. He was willing to be the voice, to speak the judgment of God, but he was completely unwilling to model the compassion of God. Do you see that? I'm going to tell you why this is important. Jonah was willing to speak the judgment of God, but he was unwilling to model the compassion of God. Throughout much of the history of the Christian church, we have followed in these same footsteps. We're very happy to talk about God's judgment and sin and wrath and condemnation and hell, but not willing to model the compassion of God. In some cases, the church would even say, oh, we'll speak the judgment and model the judgment of God. Go back and read about the Inquisition or the Crusades or inner fighting, the Protestant Reformation. The church would say, we're not only going to tell you about God's judgment, we're going to model it for you by judging you, punishing you, imprisoning you, killing you. Nowhere in the Bible does God say that we should do that. Nowhere does he say we should do that. And when the church does that, it communicates a very one-sided, unbalanced, dishonest picture of God. That God is wrathful, indignant, and angry. It's a very one-sided, unbalanced, dishonest picture of God. Because in this whole picture of who he is, we choose only to represent this little part. Next slide. To speak the gospel, let's not shy away from the fact that there are components of the gospel that are hard to hear. To speak the gospel is to speak the whole gospel. And the whole gospel does contain these elements of holiness and sinfulness. It does mean that God has a right way and a wrong way. The gospel does talk about eternal reward and eternal condemnation. The whole gospel, to speak the gospel is to speak all of it. But God has called us to proclaim the gospel with our mouth and then live the love and compassion and mercy exemplified us by Jesus Christ in our lives. Speaking it is true. Next. But the lived out role of the church, in the words of Micah the prophet, was to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God. in Deuteronomy and in the Gospels. What does God require of you? To love the Lord your God with all of your heart and soul and strength. And the second commandment is like this, to love your neighbor as yourself. To model the compassion and mercy of God. Jonah refused to do this. This past week, the church in Houston, Texas, in large part, has succeeded in doing this. We've succeeded in doing this. Here's the question. In the middle of a hurricane, we're more like the Ninevites and the sailor. The sailors in chapter 1. We're more willing to do these things in the midst of crisis. Will we do so when this crisis fades and all of the other crises that we just live with kind of fade into the background? I'd gone to Baytown on Thursday to visit one of our church families. They took in three feet of water in their home. We had a group out there Friday and again Saturday helping them clean out. And we, after trudging through their house and their yard and just talking with them, we went to find lunch, and we ended up at a KFC Taco Bell over there on 146. We tried Whataburger, of course, because you should always try Whataburger before KFC Taco Bell. But the Whataburger was closed. And so KFC Taco Bell was one of the only places open, and there was lots of people in and out. The line was long. The service was slow. The people working there were doing the best they could with what they had and the flow of people that were in there. The drinks didn't have ice. Some people were grumbling and complaining, but they were at least being nice about it. And I sat there in Kentucky Fried Chicken, and I was really appreciative that it wasn't just a Taco Bell, that it was also a KFC Taco Bell. And I watched people as they were so gracious and so appreciative that these people had come into work and that these people were making them chalupas and making them, you know, buckets of fried chicken. And they were patient and they expressed their gratitude and they told them thanks. And I sat there and I thought, why does it take a hurricane for us to appreciate the people working at the KFC Taco Bell for making us food? Why does it take a hurricane for us to appreciate the people working after HEB has closed? Does HEB close? After Kroger has closed, Randall's have closed, coming up to work before they're even open, in the middle of the night, unloading trucks and restocking shelves. Why does it take a hurricane for us to appreciate them getting groceries on the shelves so that we can go and get water and milk and bread? Why does it take a hurricane for us to see somebody in our neighborhood we don't even know pulling carpet out of their house and stop and get out of our car and go introduce ourselves and ask if they need help? Why does it take a hurricane to make us do that? Have these things been hard for us to do this week? They're remarkably easy to do this week. Why does it take a hurricane for us to hear about needs in another community and pool our resources and come together and form up in teams and go out to help meet those needs? Has that been hard to do? It's been hard work. But it's been easy to do. Being the church, it's not that hard. What's hard is getting ourselves out of the way and our own pursuits and our own desires, getting some of those things out of the way so that we will give of our time and our energy and our resources. You know what? We told people after Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, a lot of people have been up here 3 days in a row. We told them on Saturday, said, look, if you need a day to rest, take to tomorrow off and go rest. Take care of yourself. We're going to be here again tomorrow. We're going to be here again Tuesday. We're going to be here again. There's plenty of time. But it's the right thing to do. It's the easy thing to do. The question I have is this, and I want you to remember this. A month from now, when a lot of this is starting to fade, will you still go check on your neighbor and ask them how they're doing? If you see somebody that needs a hand, will you still go and lend a hand? If you have an opportunity to thank somebody, to hug somebody's neck, to tell them you appreciate them, whether you know them or not, will you still do that? Because whenever a hurricane hits, what we've seen is all those things that the church does, everybody does. Everybody's doing those things. When the hurricane goes away and the crises that we're having to deal with are kids dropping out of school, trying to alleviate labor trafficking and sex trafficking in our city, caring for victims of domestic abuse and violence, when the crisis we have to deal with are people that live every day and never know that God loves them and that He's made a way for them to connect to Him through His Son, Jesus Christ. When these are the crises at hand, and they're not in the news, and they're not slowly rising in our living rooms, will we still? Will we still? Some thoughts for you to consider as we wrap. Think about the ways the people of God are modeling grace and mercy and love. Think about the way people that don't even acknowledge God are still doing this. Grace and mercy and love, it's in us. It's the thumbprint of God stamped on us. It's the image of God. Think about how you've seen all those things. And then ask yourself or consider why sometimes we don't or how we can continue to do so when these crises slip into the background and become less visible.